Welcome to Brave. Be inspired by the best leaders of Southeast Asia tech. Build the future, learn from our past, and stay human in between. I'm Jeremy Au, a VC, founder, and father. Join us for transcripts, analysis, and community at www.jeremyau.com. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you because you not only represent a very interesting form of vertical technology, which is really about digitizing property and all the various management functions and communications at a neighborhood level, mm-hmm. but you also represent Malaysia technology, right, in terms of the sector. So I'm excited to get into it. So David, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is David. I'm the co-founder of Jaga App, which belongs to Red Ideas, the company. We're based in Petaling Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia. We started selling since 2015, December. And right now we listed on Bursa Lip Board in 2017. And now we have over 500 neighborhoods in Malaysia using our solution.
Amazing. And so what's interesting, of course, is that you really went through to technology and through an interesting route because what stood out to me was that you used to work on Mami, right?
Yes.
Which is our favorite childhood snack. I definitely ate a lot of Mami in Singapore and Malaysia walking around.
That's right.
Now I'm like, whoa, it's still very tasty. So tell us more about how you ended up joining Mami and becoming an executive there.
Sure. So what happened is I started off in the banking industry. I was an investment banker. I used to work in Hong Kong for debt capital markets. After that, for a couple months, years, I was like realizing that maybe banking is not something really for me in the sense that I always want to feel like I want to do something that's a bit more real, if you get me, in the sense that it's not just about finding opportunity to raise funds and just loan. It's not even raise funds, just loan and different type of loans and trading, etc. So I came across this fantastic company called Mami Double Decker and then stumbled upon a chance to join them as their business development guy. So I took the opportunity to join them and went into the corporate field, started off doing export, doing sales, and then I had their strategy team back then and also running their beverage commercial division, which was a very fruitful experience for me in terms of FMCG. I think it's always inside me that I have this burning desire to start my own thing, to be an entrepreneur, to do my own solution that can help to be more real and also to help the world. Like what Steve Jobs used to say, create a dent in the universe. That was back when I was much more younger and much more foolish. Of course, with the advancement in Malaysian tech, in the world tech as well, that technology has become more and more easily available. And everyone has a mobile phone, even back in those days. So we think, hey, it's a good, interesting solution. It actually happens with a small story between me and my co-founder. Me and my co-founder in Asia, we were longtime friends, ex-colleagues as well. So we always have this mama session to talk about the next big thing they want to do, whether it's opening a hotel, whether it's running a new business. Or not. We always explore different ideas. And sometimes we go until 3, 4 a.m. at night just to talk about ideas. One day, I came late. I went late into the mama session and he asked me what happened. It's very simple. The condo that I live in, I stay on the 18th floor. The lift was under maintenance. So they shut down the lift and no one knows about it at all. I'll keep pressing the lift. Nothing happened. So I walked down 18th floor. And then there's a notice on ground floor saying that, you know, lift is under maintenance. Not much help to me. And at the same time, also, he was sharing his frustration about his neighborhood where they have to collect money for the security fees. And it's very troublesome to do that. And there's no way to enhance security for the neighborhood. So we just kept talking and talking until, hey, I bet that someone is doing this out there. Let's spend the next 30 minutes to search online and see if there's any solution really readily available. And back then it was 2013-ish. There's nothing really what we talk about. So we say, hey, this sounds interesting. So let's draw up something. And then, yeah, here you go. And that's why how we came up with a Jaga app and the whole Jaga solution, we call it. Right?
So for those who don't know what Jaga means, could you explain it to everybody across Southeast Asia?
Sure. Jaga is a Bahasa word. On the surface, it means to protect, to take care. It also means to care. Colloquially, also we refer the security guard as Jaga. So it can be like, I Jaga you Jaga me means I take care of you, take care of me, in a funny way. Of course, currently, if you live in Malaysia, you're following Malaysia COVID situation, we have tagline like Kita Jaga Kita means we take care of each other. There's a history between the brand name as well. We started off calling ourselves as Grab, okay? This was back in 2013. have to be mindful of the timeline. So we actually GRAAAB. We come with three A's. Reason is very simple. We actually wanted GRAB, but the domain name is just too way too expensive for a small little startup. So we registered a AAA. And the reason being is that we want everyone to be able to grab the better life, to have more secure neighborhood, better communication, and more convenient lifestyle. And then we went on that. Of course, after we launched, we've been selling for a while, and then suddenly Grab was taken, the name. We're thinking, hey, maybe we should change our name and just be a bit more representing a bit more us, a bit more real in a sense, although it's risky when it comes to a local name per se. But we think that it's easy in a way that people can relate directly to it. Credit to my friend who came up with the idea. That's why we went with Jaga.
Amazing. What's interesting is that, you know, you had this desire to build a business. And how did that come about?
It's probably me in a sense that I always find inefficiencies in a lot of things that we do in life. And I'm always all about optimizing efficiency if you can. So like, let's say when I joined Mommy Double Decker or even when I was in a bank, I always look for ways to do things better. How to photocopy in the fastest manner, how to organize files in a better way. The more you do, the more inefficiency you will discover. And that gives me joy in a way, right, to fix it. So I always want to do something in the sense that it will help. Mankind is a big word, but I just want to use it anyway, right, to help the world to be a better place. One of the ways is to use technology to make connectivity better. So everyone is interconnected and then things can be more efficient and things can get better. So there is always at the back of my mind. Of course, I thought about a lot of ideas and my partners as well. So we always talk about like e-commerce, etc. But of course, there are certain parts of things we can do, certain parts of things we can't really do. But that's in me, where I always try to fix efficiency. And we stumble upon this opportunity to start Jaga.
Before you made that plunge, were you reading about technology or startups or entrepreneurship?
Yeah. I was reading tons of books back then. Of course, I was also trying to learn some coding as well. Not very good at it at all. I always stuck at introductory and chapter one for Python and whatever language is it. I guess I was interested in tech. I always try to build something. I always find it very cool to be able to build something by myself. I read a lot of books as well. Last year was inspired by Steve Jobs' speech about be hungry and be foolish. It's not literally just need to be hungry always and be foolish always. It's the desire, the acknowledgement that you don't know everything and the desire to always find out new things to learn and new things to do. And it kind of like shift my mind and says that, hey, actually, I can do it better. I want to do something different. And that kickstart the journey and stuff. Yeah.
What's interesting is that you had this longtime collaborator that you talk business ideas with called Ignatius. So how did you first get to know him? And eventually, why this idea is the one that actually meet you, start that journey with him?
Right. So Ignatius, I met him during my first job in Malaysia in the financial sector. He was the equity analyst, the only equity analyst. I was the only fixed income analyst. So we both were sitting next to each other. The common joke that you always still tell you today is we started off sitting next to each other and until today we're still sitting next to each other. So there's no job career progression at all. He's a funny guy. He's a creative guy. He is so very ambitious, very easy to talk to. And smart guy as well. So he studied in Bristol. I studied in Melbourne. So we always have this Australian-UK fight about which university is better, etc. So we get along pretty well. I know him for more than, they'll disclose my age, but I know him for more than probably 15 years, 15 years. Among my friends, he's probably one of those that with real entrepreneurial spirit and actually put his action into it. He started a couple of business, a bit small of them. Some of them, he invested in some F&B business. He also did some buy-sell home renovation projects as well. So he's always very into property and very into entrepreneurial journey as well. So when I brought this idea to him, when we discussed about it and we talked, why don't we do an app? Of course, initially he was very reluctant because both of us, we are from financial background. We were not coders, right? We are not coders. So I don't know about coding, but one thing I like about it is related to property, which he liked. So we started going to it and talk more about it. And then I realized that, hey, this is a big problem that we can solve. And this is a very underserved market as well. So during the market research phase, we also went to visit some condo. We spoke to some property managers. We went into the property management offices as well, even some property developers. We found that a lot of them, back then, they were still doing things on whiteboard, paper and pen. Even at Guard House, you see the guard just registering people using paper and pen. So we think, hey, this is a really underserved market. Huge opportunity here. So we talk about it, we deliberate about it. I also talk to our mentor about it. We say, let's do it. So that's how it went.
When you decided to go for it, what was the conversation that you had with him to be like, this is a good idea versus this is another one of the ideas that we've talked about for so many years?
I think for those that not in our industry, they always think of it as this is a very easy industry because you have tons of condos out there. You have a lot of houses, a lot of homes, a lot of neighborhoods. It's just tons of it. The one of the biggest upside that we see back then, right? Of course, now we still believe it is that there are so many homes in Malaysia. If we charge X amount of money per house, we can be super rich. That kind of concept, right? So we make the calculation, we do the numbers, and we say that, hey, this looks like a big market. That is quite interesting. It's very expandable as well. That after residential, we can actually look into commercial space as well, even factories, even warehouses, etc. So when it comes to property, it's very scalable in that sense. So of all the options that we thought about it, of the things that we thought too, we thought this is the most pretty interesting one. And both of us have huge passions in terms of property sector. That's why we went into it.
So let's talk about the property sector in Malaysia. So what makes Malaysian property market different or unique in Southeast Asia from your perspective?
The property sector in Malaysia, it's always been interesting in the sense that there are new projects being launched, putting COVID period aside. Before this, every month there are new launches and there's always interest in it. I'm from Ipoh. So when people from our town come to KL, the first thing they do is rent a place. After that, they will find a place to buy. So the in terms of Malaysian development, out of the 13 states, 12 states will actually come to KL or Selangor in general. So there's always a demand in terms of Klang-Barre properties. And after that, you see the booming in Penang's properties and also in Johor properties. There's a lot of interest and talk about them. And also for most people, if not all, property purchase is probably the single largest investment they've done in their life. So naturally, everyone cares about properties. And also in terms of a home setting, it's the closest to us. So live in a good place and a good property will actually be the most important things for everyone. That's how we look at property sector. But also we look at it from a property management point of view. We always talk about it this way. When you buy a property, it's like love at first sight. You go for dating and then you like this property. It's so nice. You know, it's affordable. I can see we have a long future with it. So I buy it. And after that, when you live into it, and then let's say you live in a condo, for instance, there are a lot of factors that's affecting the marriage, we call it. So property management is like managing your marriage in a way that is a well-maintained properties. The value will actually increase over time. Well-managed properties, it makes you feel safe and actually it makes people want to rent the place. It makes people want to buy the place. The sexiness of buying properties is always overweight the property management side, which seems as a dull sector per se. Property management is actually a very interesting and noble job. And it's also, no one really appreciates what property management team has done for the condo. When we first started this business, we don't see people say, hello, goodbye, thank you to property managers or the security guards for these matters. Thanks to our team, we see there's improvement in it. People start to show some respect in that. Also, it's our society in a way. I think we can speak for Asia in general. No one actually grew up on their primary school essay say that I grew up, I want to be a property manager. So the kind of mindset is that then the people that got attracted to the industry in the early days, they say they have no choice. There's no other job out there, so there's a picket. So the industry is at infancy. So we see there's a huge opportunity here for us to make property management better, to be more professional, to have a standard and a guideline. And all of that start with a tool, a right tool for them to work on. So that is why we look at it. That's why we started in Malaysia, as a matter of fact.
What's interesting about property management, like you said, is that it's so undervalued in the whole property sector, let alone the tenants. Mm. So why is it so underappreciated?
I guess in the sense that human nature as well, because people look at property manager as someone there to serve them. Most of the time, they treat property managers like a concierge in a hotel. You're here to serve me, that kind of idea. But what we find out, the most important thing is people don't know what a property manager needs to do. A lot of work that's done by property managers is also called behind the scenes. They did routine check on the lift. They do like a routine check on the pumps, water filter, etc. They make sure the cleaners come on time. They make sure the guards come on time, do their job, manage the finances, manage the collection, manage the security concern, manage all small projects like enhancement on neighborhood, add fencings, add barricades, issuance of SS cards, issuance of car park stickers. Tons of work. There's no proper communication tool to let the residents know that, hey, your property managers have done all this for you. Well, what they see in the olden days is that just a paper notice, that stick on the notice board to say that, please be informed that blah, 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 blah. So there's not much connection there. There's not much communication going on. And most of the time, before the implementation of technology in the neighborhood, residents only go to property management office to complain and to make payment to your bills or whatnot, right? And most of the time, residents come in with a negative feeling. So when I see this guy, it's all about, I want to complain. It's about, I want to scold them. So as the sentiment built on, people don't really, back then, don't really appreciate much property managers at them. They just say, hey, you know, why this problem has not been solved? I submitted it 2 hours ago. And also, property management team, they have a lot of things to do. As I mentioned earlier, they were just a part of it. But there's no proper to-do list for them. There's no proper system for them to track their work. And also, there's no proper workflow for job assignments, follow-up, keep track as well. So that is a thing that we can help them with our solution.
So what's interesting is that as you build out this app, it's really a way to make the experience better rather than to replace people in the property, which is quite interesting because a lot of technology classically is like replace people, save cost, whereas yours is about a better experience.
Yeah.
How do you find the benefits for the tenants versus the developers?
On our client base, actually, we work with developers very closely as well. So I started with that. We work with developers basically help to make their projects on the property management side slightly better. Okay, let me put it this way, where most of the time what we don't see at the behind the scene, from the handover from property to the, we call it GMB in Malaysia, the management bodies, the committees for the neighborhood, there's always a lot of friction in the sense that the developers can't be handing over their property developers accounting software over to the committees. And that is just one part of it. So most of the time, they just hand over Excel spreadsheet to them and they will just need to do whatever they need to do about it. And along the way, there are a lot of track records, the maintenance record, et cetera, that need to be handed over. So back then, it was a lot of meetings after meetings after meetings for those files to be sent over. And you need the committees or the property managers to pick it up from there. So we see a lot of values in there in the sense that we help them to bridge that, to make sure that the communication is better. The files is all one system since day one, so it's easy for the property managers or the committee to use it straight away. Even we also developed the accounting solutions right a while back that even have the smooth transition from developer side all the way to the GMB. So we see there's a big value in that. And then for the tenant itself, it's very relevant to us today because back then as a tenant, as a resident, as an owner, no matter what, even issuance of car park, issuance access card, you have to go to management office. There's no other way about it. Make payment, booking of facilities, et cetera. So right now, with technology, with our solution, residents, even they're overseas, they're in Singapore, they also can book a facilities. They can book for badminton court for tomorrow, for his friends, for instance, right? So he can pre-register a visitor before they come. They can read notices in the app itself. They can even call for maid services, cleaning services, plumbers, et cetera, in our app. So that adds a lot of value to them. And more importantly also, we have a tenant features in our app as well. So both owners and tenants can sign on to our platform. And even owners don't stay in the neighborhood or don't stay in the same country, they can still manage the tenant from there as well.
So now that you've become such an expert in property in Malaysia, especially because before that you were not, right? You were in finance and then you were at FMCG, right?
That's right.
That you come in, what myths or misconceptions do you now know is different from reality regarding the property sector in Malaysia?
Yeah. The biggest misconception that we see is that when they say they know about property, it's always about the buy-sell property part of things. At first, I thought I'm pretty good at property as well, but apparently I'm not. My partner is very good at renovation and stuff, right? When he comes in, it's like, oh, there's so much thing to learn. The biggest misconception is people don't know how much work the property managers and the committee need to do. And more importantly, it's like how to be a good committee. Most of the time, when we go to the neighborhood, we actually talk to them and we actually do our sharing with them. Being a committee, it's like a board of directors of a listed company. Your job is to provide good governance, to supervise, to set the directions and to manage the funds and make sure there's no fraud, etc. But the CEO will be your property manager. The property manager is not your slave or your errand boys. They are your CEO of your condo or the neighborhood. A lot of people don't know that. They treat it like an old-fashioned way. So chairman must be someone that is highly reputable, respected doctor or lawyer or whatever, that kind of thing. So there's a huge misconception of that. And when we talk to the residents, they have a lot of dissatisfactions. They have a lot of complaints about things. We actually, I always encourage them to say that, hey, why don't you join the committee? They'll be like, nah, not for me. You know, I'm not good enough. You know, that kind of thing. It's like, I'm going to plug in something I learned from crypto, right? In the sense that everyone in the community has a part in it as well. This is your neighborhood. This is your property. If you want it to run well, you have to be part of it. You have to be brave to attend AGM where people don't go to AGM at all. So these are the biggest misconception that everyone thinks about property as just leave it to the property guys and nothing much for me to do. So what we have done so far, we actually try to bring people closer together and understand this is our common problem. It's not one person problem, which is the biggest misconception in my point of view.
You made me laugh because you're totally right. So many people complain, but then they're like, oh, should I be part of the committee? Should I help out? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think it's not just a human thing, but it's also a very interesting community thing, which is that you are acting as a consumer, but you're not really a community member, but you're helping out improve the situation either.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting, right? Because parents from Malaysia, everything, we always talk about like kampung spirit, knew each other, that we knew our neighbors. Then there's a hitman who will be in charge of the little small zone.
That's right.
So what do you think about that kampung spirit and now at a condo? Is that a condo spirit?
Yeah. You brought it right time. As cliche as it sounds, me and Asia, we always wanted to bring kampung spirit back to Malaysia. I grew up in a small town, small neighborhood itself, it's not kampung, but it does have the kampung feeling as well. Currently don't, right? I mean, most people don't know their neighbors. When they see people in the lift, they will be like, stay away from me, right? I don't want to talk to you. Generally, that's what happens in big cities as well. We hope we can bring back the kampung spirit. We also acknowledge that things have changed. Parenthood style have changed as well. Back in my days, where people leave their gate open, and the kids will just run in and out across the street to the padang or whatever, not to the field to play. Right now, no. You know, the parents will be like, no way, that kind of thing. Right? But what we can still foster is to bring out the spirit of care. We believe that if you have the right means to know what's happening in the neighborhood, if you have the right tools to act on it, to provide feedback, to report wrong visitors or wrong incidents, to activate our emergency assist, for instance, you actually play a part into enhancing your neighborhood. For instance, give you an example, right? A lot of people ask us, hey, why do you guys focus so much on pre-registering of visitors? We say that, look, if everyone in the condo pre-register their visitors, means they already pre-registered and they've done a vetting first. So not only help out the guards in terms of the registration work, but also enhance the security of the neighborhood itself. Most of the time, robbery and attempt robbery can be prevented if they have a better vetting of visitors. It's the same as border control for our customs. So this is a very important element. If everyone plays a part in vetting their visitors, pre-registering their visitors, we will help to make our place a much safer place. That's number one. Number two, it's about reading what's happening in the neighborhood in terms of notices, updates. Now, right now, the most popular use features on the app is notice board because it's COVID cases update, what's happening, etc. So we see people are doing that as well. So going forward, we also will try to make a marketplace for them in the sense that in the spirit of we care each other, kita jaga kita, right? So let's say I cook curry, I can actually put it up and let neighbors to claim, take, buy, sell, whatever not. We've just got to provide a platform and the facilities for it. And then people will just expand the usage of it. People might lose their job, but they have a piano at home. They can be a piano teacher and open a tuition class in the neighborhood itself. So we are very excited about the neighborhood setting, the community spirit, the communal spirit, building of it. It's nowhere near the kampung spirit, Jeremy, I'm going to be honest to you. People are always busy with their life. But I think working from home and everyone stuck at home for so long, it kind of bring back a bit of that because nothing matters more than our own place. So we see there's a good time for us to do that. Part of the Kampung Spirit program as well, we actually have a so-called CSR program called Jaga Care. Currently, what we do is that we actually link up some charity groups so that our user can donate to them or reach out to them for help. That's one. But going forward, we believe that every neighborhood, because in the marketing slogan, we say that we take care of you. We jaga your neighborhood. So your neighborhood can jaga a cause. Could it let it be for animals, for whatnot, to jaga a charity group, for instance. So these are things that we're working on as well to make everyone to be more involved in the neighborhood.
It's interesting because when we start talking about care, it almost seems like in order for people to care about their neighbors, they also have to feel safe as a neighborhood and community, which is quite interesting because that means you have that wall, but within the wall, you can be more warm. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's very interesting as well. We have a lot of difficulties and challenges in the industry. In terms of this biggest challenge in this industry is the line between communities and privacy, because it's our home after all. We are very mindful of that since day one. So when we develop the system, basically, whatever data is on the platform, it's yours. It's your belong to the neighborhood itself. Even in our dealing with property managers, we allow two-way communication, but between one-on-one. So it's not one-to-many in a sense. So if I, as a resident, I need to provide a feedback to the community, only myself was sent to the building management team. But of course, the building management team can do broadcast to all, but when they reply to me, it just replied to me. So we keep the channel private, in a sense. We have notices, like I mentioned just now, which is a bit more community-based, more broadcast-based. But the key thing that we realized that is that when it comes to this space, people, of course, they are very worried about the private policies and PDPA, the data and stuff like that. And of course, we got to address since day one. And we also make sure of it in the sense that your property management team right now already have a lot of data about you. And of course, it's stored in paper. And it just now it's just stored in digitally rather than Excel, put it on the system itself for them to use. So we as a platform, we make it very clear that we don't go into that. We are just a platform to provide you to work on your data, but we don't meddle into that. But as a platform itself, the key thing is that we, like I mentioned just now, we try to provide a bridge first for them to feel safe to interact with each other. But that's why in part of features, we don't unlock the feature for neighbor to talk to neighbor because it could be very scary and very encroaching as well. And there could be a lot of stalking activities going on. We don't know. So we don't want to go there. But for us, it's all about being part of a neighborhood while not being too exposed about your own identity.
So here you are and you've learned along the way. Could you tell us about time that you have been brave?
The moment that I think that I'm myself, that I feel that the bravest, right, is actually going to this business altogether. Quitting a comfortable job, much better pay, much better company car, much better perks, into nothing. Started with nothing, zero salary, zero nothing, right? Zero employee. Me and my partner Ignatius, we have to design our own invoice and receipt. I bought my own table, I carry it back as well. Everything is rewarding, nonetheless. It's actually a very fun journey. I think having the courage to take the leap of faith, it was one of the bravest things I've ever done. I'm glad that it turned out pretty well.
What was it like? Because I totally get it. You had your own car, your own perks, right, as an executive at an FMCG company. What was that like? Did you know what it was going to be like to not have those perks anymore? Or were you like...
Yeah, no idea.
No idea.
No idea. I mean, I totally underestimated the whole entrepreneurial journey. Although we can read a lot of it, we can hear a lot of it from different podcasts and stuff like that. People say starting a business is tough. I knew it's going to be tough, but I didn't know it's that tough. It's for the first time in my working career that I see no income coming in and just outflow. And that part of the journey is actually very challenging. And of course, I still need to pay my bills, you know, to take care of the house. So it's very challenging on that part. And I think the mental stress that comes with it as well is it's very hard for other people to imagine. So I always tell my friends, they say that, you know, I hate working for other people. I want to start my own business. So what I share with them is very simple. Right? Sometimes working for people is good. It provides you a very good platform. It provides you stable income. If you can be intra-entrepreneur, even better. Try to run certain projects. Be proactive in the work you do. Don't be so stupid like me and just, you know, just quit the job and go to do other stuff. It's rewarding nonetheless, but you must be ready for that. Having income coming in every month, it's a good thing. In a sense, it makes you feel very comfortable, have a peace of mind. When you stop seeing the income coming in your bank account, you have this mental stress that starts building up. And you suddenly feel that you're running out of time. I need to make it better. I need to make it faster. And the most important thing is the support from family during this. I have a very understanding wife. She takes care of a lot of stuff for me during the time. And literally, I say I leech on my wife as an entrepreneur and have a very good co-founders and team that believe in the dream together and work on it together. That helped me pull through the whole period.
Yeah, that's really good advice. You know, one interesting thing I always remember that my friends and I will always be like, thank God for our wives who have health insurance.
Yes.
Or our husbands who have health insurance. Because, you know, as a founder, you have no health insurance. So you,
exactly.
know, you have to go on their plan, you know. So that you're like, wow, I never knew health insurance was a nice perk to have.
Exactly. Right. In Malaysia, we call it EPF. Right? In Singapore, it's CPF. It's a pension fund contribution. Yeah, that stopped as well. So it's quite a shocker as well. And then as I'm a salaryman for most of my life, that's a shocker. In the end of the day, I need to go to the pension fund to withdraw funds for my, related to my property maintenance stuff. I need to live on that as well, which is so shocking. Yeah. But it's all good. All good.
What advice would you give to people who are like in your position? So they're like an executive or a leader, someone who has that initiative, and they're thinking about setting up something new. What advice would you give to them? So it sounds like one piece of advice is, hey, use this time to become entrepreneurial and do something for the company. What other advice do you normally give them?
Talk to people about your ideas. Try to brainstorm it more. Sometimes we are overconfident about our own ideas. All the time, we are overconfident about our own ideas. And I was thinking the best, the next best thing after sliced bread, right, is my new idea. Talk to people. No worry about people stealing ideas because after all, it's all about execution. Talk it out. Talk to people from different age group, not just with your best bud or just with your husband or wife. Talk to someone older. Talk to someone younger as well because the generation gap thing is real. It's very real. Talking to millennials, talking to teenagers these days is different. Talking to people in the 60s, 70s, they are different as well. And also, they always say that if you cannot explain your ideas in simple words, maybe it's probably too hard for anyone to understand anyway, especially for VC, for instance. And that is the first step to do that. And after you're talking to other people, you have to do a lot of calculation. You must have runway to do it. You must have an idea of how you're going to raise your funds. You must have a very clear revenue model. If not, don't do it. Don't do it. You'll be begging money from friends and family, and then that's it. Nothing's going to happen. Thirdly, you must have good people with you to start the project with. Don't just expect that I'm going to raise this seed funding, I'm going to hire a team of 15 people, that kind of thing. It works for some, but a lot of time, you will be just hiring people that might not share your dream. It's important to have comrades next to you to fight this journey together. If everyone believes it's a good idea and you believe it, then just go for it. Life is short.
One tricky part is that as someone who is a little bit more experienced as a founder now, I'm sure you have a lot of friends who are coming to you with different ideas, asking you for advice. And I think I'm in that position too. And I almost see like a bell curve. Some people, you hear the idea in the background, you're like, well, this guy for sure, he's going to be more successful than me. That's what I say. You know, so these are very, they're good to go. And there's a bunch of people who are like me, who are still figuring stuff out. You know, we've got something and we want to keep working along and pushing it along. And then there's also a group of founders who are their friends, but I'm not sure what advice to give them because I feel like, and I know they're struggling or they tell me they're struggling. And it's a very tough conversation to have because you're trying to have a conversation. You're not trying to say like, oh, you are a terrible person or you will never be good at business. We're not trying to be like that. But we're just trying to like, hey, you know, what's going on? So what advice do you have for that conversation for this third category? Yeah.
Normally, in general, when people come to me with business ideas and just to brainstorm, I always tell them, I'll be quite blunt in a way. I'll be saying that I don't think you are a good salesman. You are a good thinker. Probably good at execution, but you're not a good salesman. What you need to do right now is find a CSO or someone that can sell as your partner. They have to acknowledge their shortcoming first. I'll normally turn their shortcoming to hire from someone or find someone to work with you. If you don't like to present, find someone that likes to present. If you don't like numbers, find someone that likes numbers. You have to do that because that's how you start business. In the journey itself, you realize that if it's very hard for you to find people to share the same idea with you, then or to like your idea, then you have to reassess your idea. Maybe you need to make a tweak about it, right? It'd be crazy for me to start a ride-hailing company today. It's a proven model, but it's tough. But if someone is crazy enough to do that with me, you know, and I really want to do it, why not, right? So that's the idea I always give them.
Yeah, I think that's good advice, which is, it's less about saying that, here's my direct feedback, but also saying, hey, one way to solve it is to bring that on your team.
Right.
And I think that's a tough one because I remember as a founder, it's very hard to acknowledge your own weaknesses or weak points.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's just all these assholes who tell me I'm not good at something. And I'm just like, yeah, I totally get it. So I'm just trying to figure this stuff out as well.
Yes.
So it's also quite hard to feel okay accepting the feedback. What advice do you have for people to be better able to take feedback or know when to take the feedback?
You're right in the sense that every founder, of course, they are overly confident in their ideas and the business they are in. Some are easier to take feedback, some are harder to take feedback, which, put it this way, from my point of view, every idea is a good idea. It really depends on executions and the team that's executing it. So I normally don't downplay people's idea, unless it's really, really crazy. They will know themselves anyway. But I don't really criticize an idea. I normally say, maybe you can try, add on to this, you know, do this thing, that kind of thing. But I always bring them back in the sense that try to recommend things to do differently in the sense that you are great at codings, you have your tech guys, etc. I think what you're lacking is funding. Then I'll try to share with them, like, do you know a Series A, Series B, Series C? Maybe you should read that up first and then see how it goes. Jeremy, probably you'll be better than me at this, but I always try to find things that probably he or she hasn't covered yet to make him feel excited about learning something new. Then from there, maybe it's easy for him or her to accept feedback. Yeah, normally I think that when people try to do a new business on their own, they are normally a bit stubborn, a bit crazy, and it's very hard to accept and listen to feedback. So the best way to go about it is to throw them new challenges, a new challenge, and they were like, yeah, sounds fun. You know, then they probably will go for it.
I love that tip. It's a good one, which is instead of saying you're bad at something, which we're all bad at something, but make it more like, hey, this is a chance for you to learn something new, which is maybe you're good at sales at your last job, but now you're doing sales in a new sector. So this is your chance to learn something new about sales at the Series A scale in this new vertical. It's a much more positive way of saying it, for sure.
Yes.
And so I guess for me, I'm just kind of curious, if as we start to wrap things up here,
sure,
what's something that you read these days? Is there any good books that you like that you read over the past year?
Yes, because of COVID, I read a few books last year, but I haven't been reading much these days because I've been reading a lot of crypto these days. I'm very fascinated by the whole white paper design and blockchain and stuff like that, but I won't go into that. The last book that I read, I find very interesting. It's The Journey of a Lifetime by Bob Iger. It's very easy read. It's very interesting as well. In a sense, it relates a lot to us in this business space and startup space as well. Even running a company like Disney is a challenge. We always look at it as pirate ship. We run a pirate ship. We would need to have a fleet of pirate ship. And then after that, we will turn ourselves to Navy. This is what those guys used to say. But most of us don't think of it that what happened to my business when it become real big, become a Disney. What is my growth path? Everyone just think of cash out, ka-ching, that kind of thing, right? But let's be real. Let's say I want to run this business for life. How should I build it? Am I building it the right way to enable it to be the next big thing, to be a bigger entity, to be a responsible company in the world? And from Bob's book on Disney story, I find it's very interesting the way he structured a small unit, a small team, and crazy ideas. He has the best job in the world. And he can also talk to Steve Jobs about buying over Pixar and stuff like that. It's crazy buying over Lucasfilm. I mean, who would have thought that? And how he put things together and the transformations to make Disney as a company that could very highly likely to be irrelevant into this market to be super relevant. And they have the vision to do that, and they do it. I think it's very interesting to be on that.
It's interesting you say that because I think I love the phrase journey of a lifetime. And obviously I love the phrase about what you do when you cross those different phases. And I think that's something you covered a lot of. So wrapping things up here, I'd love to paraphrase the three big themes that I took away from this conversation. The first, of course, is thank you so much for sharing about your life from mommy, you know, and an iBanker to becoming a founder. And I really love, I think, the details and the chronology where you shared about what was it actually like brainstorming multiple ideas, what actually was like talking and getting started with Ignatius, and what it was actually like to found something. So that's something that is really helpful. The second thing I really enjoy, of course, was a lot of the tips and thoughts around property, and more specifically, the fact that we all think we're good at property because we buy property. But it doesn't mean we know anything about managing property. And I actually really like what you shared here, took notes here, was about how you see the difference between why people are so negative about property management because every interaction is a negative one. And contrasting that actually to the kampong spirit where if you're part of the community and you're frustrated about something, you too also have an active role to play in that. And I think it's really exciting to see Jaga App be part of that transformation and bringing back some of that community spirit back to these properties. And lastly, I really appreciate you sharing about the difficult psychological part in terms of the transition from becoming an executive and salaryman towards a founder and some of the tough times. And we joke a little bit about how we don't have health insurance. You know? We use our spouse's health insurance and things like that. And I also really appreciate about how you think about giving advice to other founders as well, because I think it's very tough even for ourselves to acknowledge feedback. And this was very tough for us to give feedback to other founders as well. Because, you know, we feel like the world's pretty tough. So we don't want to give each other more negative stuff. And I thought it was quite smart about how you thought about how to give the same feedback as bluntly and honestly as possible, yet at the same time repositioning it in a positive way. For example, like, and now you can hire someone for that. Or this is a new way, a new chance to learn something about this space. And I think that was really good advice for lots of different folks.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Brave. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share this episode with friends and colleagues. Sign up at www.jeremyau.com to discuss this episode with other community members in our forum. Stay well and stay brave.